Welcome, listener, to the Legal Page podcast. Today, we are discussing the clauses experienced business owners wish they would have put in their contract when they first started. We polled our Facebook community regarding this topic so that you can get firsthand knowledge of what these biz owners actually forgot to put in their contract or learned about later on regarding a client experience that probably should have been in their contract. Also, what clauses they really regret not having. And of course, I'm going to give you my take on what clauses you should always have in your contract. Can't wait to chat with you, Legal Pagers. You're listening to the Legal Page podcast, where we chat about life and business with a legal twist. I'm Paige, attorney and photographer helping online businesses and creatives tackle their business dreams without breaking out in hives. No more legal mumbo jumbo. This podcast features simple, bite-sized advice that'll have you legally legit in no time. Are you ready? Let's get started. As a reminder, before we get into this episode, I am legally obligated to give my disclaimer. I am an attorney, but I am not your attorney. All legal information I talk about in this episode is intended for the masses and a large variety of different businesses. Please seek out another attorney in your city and home state if you need specific legal advice related to your unique business. Okay, let's get back to it. Hey everyone, thanks again so much for tuning in today. So during this podcast, we're going to talk about the coulda, woulda, shoulda in contracts. Specifically, what clauses our listeners and our TLP Facebook community wishes they would have had in their contracts. And honestly, which ones you really need to have in every single contract. Now, before I get into the feedback from our clients, customers, TLP community on Facebook regarding which clauses they wish they would have had when they first started out, I just want to name a few clauses that are really non-negotiable and should always be in your contract. These are just a few of the most important, and please be aware that this is not a comprehensive list by any means. But if you are taking notes or you would like to bullet point these clauses that are absolutes, definitely do that as you listen into this episode. So the first clause that you cannot forget is a cancellation and rescheduling policy. Sometimes this is one clause combined, and oftentimes it is two as well. You have a very specific cancellation policy and a very specific rescheduling policy. Those would probably need to be in two separate clauses. So a cancellation clause states that in the unlikely event your client cancels your services, usually it's for an event, a wedding, you know, a portrait session if you're a photographer, any like planning services you have, that the retainer is non-refundable. It would further explain that if the client does cancel within X amount of days, that the full amount is due from the client. So basically, you're not left with nothing because you have the retainer, which should be absolutely stated as non-refundable and non-transferable in your cancellation clause. And then you have that little extra additional information in your cancellation clause regarding, you know, notice provisions. So they need to notify you within a certain amount of time if they are canceling in order for you to mitigate damages so that you can try to book someone else. Of course, you're usually never obligated to. It kind of depends on your state law. But for the most part, that usually prevents people from postponing telling you about a cancellation. And it's really important because, say, if they were to cancel in like 5 to 7 days prior to your services being rendered, and it is like a wedding or event, that's basically virtually impossible to try to rebook that date on your calendar, which is why you should put in your contract that your clients are required to pay the full amount due, because there's an opportunity cost to you there. Of course, trying to get that final payment is probably left better for another podcast episode. But again, that is all of the things that you should have in the cancellation clause. You should also, I just want to mention here, have a cancellation clause in case you, as the company, have to cancel the contract. So we call this a cancellation of services by company clause. And usually this includes like any type of personal emergency. If there's like an intense breakdown of communication or a huge breach of the contract by the client, and, you know, it would allow you to cancel the contract. Or if, you know, something other like personal comes up, that you have the ability to cancel the contract. Now, remember here, it's best to always in these type of clauses put the other party in the position that they were prior to contracting. So if you are canceling the contract, unless it's a breach by the client, that's the only exception here. If you're doing it kind of voluntarily and on your own volition, then you need to give a full refund in most circumstances. But if your client is breaching, then absolutely you should probably keep the non-refundable retainer. Now, a rescheduling clause, let's talk about that clause that you need to have in your contract, is for those of you wanting to give your clients the option to reschedule with usually a fee. At this point in time, I just don't suggest complimentary reschedules whatsoever, just based upon what has happened over the past couple of years. So if you are going to allow a reschedule of some sort, so like a transfer of all fees paid to another date within a certain period of time, like all of this needs to be expressly delineated in your contract, then you need to explain that in your rescheduling clause. If you don't allow rescheduling, then you need to be really clear in your clause as well that no reschedules will be allowed. Obviously, parties can absolutely cancel a contract. So in your cancellation clauses, you know, from cancellation by the client and then cancellation by you as the company, you have to allow that to occur usually within a contract. And you need to have clauses regarding what happens if those things occur. But rescheduling is one of those things that's your business policy. You don't have to offer a reschedule. You don't have to offer it even for a fee. If you don't want to reschedule and, you know, it's kind of like a lock and key sort of thing, then if your clients are of the understanding that that's your rescheduling policy and they sign and agree to that, then you shouldn't have to have any type of clause that allows for that transferability and rescheduling. Now, overall, the key here is just really giving you and your clients flexibility depending on your business policies, really when the worst happens. So obviously, even if you have, I'm just gonna like add this little tidbit in here, even if you do have kind of like a no holds bar rescheduling policy that it can't be allowed, remember there's going to be circumstances that come up where like your clients are really begging to reschedule due to like even some massive like illness or like life-threatening situation. And if that's the case, if even though that policy is in your contract, you look like the better business owner here because you could waive that provision. And you could say, even though I don't have a rescheduling policy in my contract and I don't allow reschedules, in this specific circumstance, I'm going to allow you to do it. And here's why. And here's what I'm willing to transfer. So again, you want to allow for flexibility, but also be aware that like the concrete foundations and business policies in your contract are there for a reason so that people don't walk all over you. And you can be a little bit malleable and change things depending on the facts and circumstances, you know, of the cancellation or rescheduling. So to sum up, make sure you have a cancellation clause and a rescheduling clause in your contract. If you don't have them, make sure you put them in. Or if you are wondering if you can combine them, you absolutely can do that as well. Now, the other clause I want to talk about that is a really non-negotiable that should be in your contract is a force majeure clause. Hopefully you've learned over the past couple of years why it is important to have such clause in your contract. And hopefully you've heard the term force majeure or act of God time and time and time and time again over the past couple of years. So this is a clause that essentially relieves all parties to a contract from performing their obligations when certain circumstances arise beyond their control. So it has to be impracticable, impossible, or illegal to perform either party's or, you know, one of the parties' performance under the contract. So here you have to think fire, hurricanes, earthquakes, and other acts of God. And force majeure means forces of superior strength. And that's really important because I feel like for some reason over the past couple of years, clients are just crying force majeure for like any reason. And force majeure is really only there for very, very specific situations. So back in 2020, when COVID-19 first became a factor in the wedding and event industry and basically across the entire United States for services that needed to be rendered, performance under such contracts did fall under force majeure circumstances. And so it allowed clients and vendors to excuse themselves from performance under the contracts, i.e. it doesn't equal a breach of contract because you can't perform due to a shutdown from the pandemic. However, now this is no longer the case. And if you've listened to my other previous TLP podcast episodes, then you know that I am very, very strict on the fact that COVID-19 no longer equals force majeure. So just never let your clients walk all over you with, you know, any COVID-19 situations equaling force majeure. The only exception to this is if we have a massive shutdown. However, I still think lawyers could argue that that is predictable and foreseeable at the time of contracting right now, that you're literally taking the risk and assuming the risk of doing a event or a wedding in the middle of a pandemic. So I think there's lots of arguments to be had still that that's not a force majeure situation. But overall, this clause will still protect you from the force majeure act of God events that are most commonly known by service providers, such as severe weather, like I said, tornadoes, hurricanes, wildfires, other acts of God beyond the party's control. And this type of clause is essential in assuring that should such a situation arise, that your contract covers you. It explains how the parties need to notify one another if they are impacted by a force majeure event. It expressly delineates what your force majeure events are. Usually it includes language, including but not limited to, quote unquote, so that there's other force majeure events that maybe you didn't list that would be included in that. All to say, make sure you have a force majeure clause in your contract. Okay, the last couple I want to go over are extremely important, and they've popped up quite a bit in our inbox and Facebook community recently, and that is a harassment clause and a safe working environment clause. So let's start with the harassment clause. If you are a type of professional whereby you work with clients for an extended period of time, you have a lot of communication back and forth, this doesn't just have to be in person. And I want to be clear here. Harassment can occur in a multitude of ways. And so it's good to have a harassment clause, even if, say, like you're a website designer and you just have something extremely weird happen during a client call and there's like some racial slur or comment that happens. That is where a harassment clause really protects you in those situations. Obviously, a harassment clause is, you know, most likely suitable in an in-person service contract. So if you are like a wedding and event professional, please have a harassment clause because it's just something that happens. Like it happens all the time at weddings and events, and I want to make sure that you are protected. So this clause protects you and any of your agents, so associates, assistants, second shooters, anything like that from liability for terminating services at an event due to some type of harassment happening, you know, threatening, hostile, or inappropriate behavior on part of the clients, their guests, or any other persons and vendors. So this protection clause helps highlight to your clients what your policies are regarding these types of harassment situations, and then what will happen if they do occur. We here at TLP truly believe in the one strike rule, whereby you don't have to put yourself in a position whereby you are going to get harassed multiple times in order to leave the event. If it's an egregious harassment situation, then you should be able to just terminate services immediately. If your clients ever give you pushback on that, you could look into doing a two-strike rule where, you know, if a harassment situation occurs, then you have to notify the clients and they have to like take the proper procedures to, you know, get that guest out of the event, say, if that's what happens. And if they don't, then you can notify them that you're leaving and they didn't take, you know, the necessary precautions to make you feel safe in that situation. But again, I've talked to way too many service industry professionals that they don't want to be in that position. They just, if they're harassed and something occurs, especially if it's like an assault, then they want to leave immediately and terminate services with no further liability. So that's a harassment clause. A safe working environment clause. People sometimes get these two confused, but a harassment is obviously verbal or physical, you know, harassment of some sort. A safe working environment clause is different because it's listing out certain situations that would be illegal or absolutely unsafe for you to continue to provide services in outside of harassment. So this clause tells your clients that your company reserves the right to discontinue service in the event of that unsafe condition, such as like firearms being present at the session, right? That's not harassment. That's just extremely unsafe. Someone doing something illegal for example, smoking pot at a session or bringing marijuana to like federal lands, whereby all of you could get extremely fined. I'm just throwing out things, shooting from the hip here on when this would probably be invoked. Or potentially asking you to do something illegal or unsafe, like going off trail, say, if you, you could get a violation or a ticket from doing that. Or going to an area that has been affected by some unsafe conditions, such as contagious diseases, such as like if it's extremely unsafe to go somewhere because a wildfire is close and wildfires can change in, you know, an instant and change direction. So all of those situations would fall under a safe working environment clause. So I just want to reiterate here, the clauses that we talked about that are really non-negotiables that should be in your contract, and sometimes the ones that people most forget, and that's why I highlighted them here, are the cancellation and rescheduling clauses, a force majeure clause, a harassment clause, and a safe working environment clause. The good news is these clauses are a part of a bundle on the Legal Page website called the Protection Clause Bundle. This bundle also includes our inclement weather clause, the client's responsibility to secure insurance clause, an indemnification clause, a limitation of liability clause, and that cancellation of services by company clause that I was talking about. All of these clauses I strongly recommend having in your contract. And the good news is in this bundle, we have heavily discounted all of these clauses for you. So you don't have to purchase them a la carte. You can purchase them as a part of the bundle. So if you just go to thelegalpage.com and you type in the search bar protection clause bundle, that product will pop up for you. Ready to build a legally legit business? Become a Legal Page Insider and get exclusive access to all the top-notch resources TLP has to offer. As a TLP Insider, you'll get insider access to all of our sales and promotions, also known as better deals than anyone else, first dibs on freebies and legal classes that will help you legitimize your business and step into your role as Chief Legal Officer, jam-packed weekly newsletters so you're always up to date, and our unique perspective regarding the most pressing legal issues facing biz owners today. So to become an insider, just head to thelegalpage.com/TLP insider. Again, that's thelegalpage.com/TLP insider, all lowercase. And now let's get back to the episode. Okay, now I just want to highlight three very specific things that came from our TLP community on Facebook. So we polled all of our members and they gave us some ideas regarding clauses that they wish they would have had in their contracts when they first started. So the first one that someone told us about was a unilateral termination by vendor. So it's interesting because they call this clause a unilateral termination by vendor. I think it's very similar to a cancellation of services by company clause, but I'm going to talk about what would need to be in this clause. Okay, so the first clause that a member talked about, and they listed it as a unilateral termination by vendor clause, but the interesting thing that I want to give my spin on here is that essentially they were saying, we wanted to have a clause in our contract regarding what would happen if we needed to terminate because our client breached. However, you actually don't need this clause to do that. This is a fundamental building block of contracts that one party can unilaterally terminate if there is a serious material breach of the contract. Now, again, this is different than a cancellation of services by company clause, right? Because in that respect, you are unilaterally terminating because of something due to your own need to terminate. It has nothing to do with a breach by your client. If the client does breach, then what you need to do is explain to them what the material breach is, that you are no longer going to provide services under the contract due to that breach. And then it's usually a good idea to have your client sign a cancellation contract so that everyone is on the same page regarding the termination of services. Sometimes, though, I always feel like that's really hard and challenging to do from a legal perspective. And honestly, this is what happens when clients reach out to me as a lawyer. They're like, my client isn't signing the cancellation contract. They've already breached. All these things are happening. In that respect, you just need to like go through the steps. You need to first communicate to them via written notice. Usually it's through email. Sometimes it's through a certified letter sent in the mail that they have breached, that you're terminating services. You ask them to sign the cancellation contract as well. You're gaining evidence and proof here of all of the things that you're trying to do to terminate the right way. And then if they don't sign, you just need to send another notice that they have within X amount of days to sign. Otherwise, you will treat it as a full cancellation of the contract. You will not be performing your services, and you just want to duly note that for evidence and proof purposes. Okay, this next clause that a member talked about was a person's to be photographed clause. So one of our legal pagers had their client bring extra family members or friends to their family session for that just one shot, right? It's never just that one shot. I remember all of this. It's bringing me back to my photography days. So this is obviously unacceptable and probably in breach of a lot of your contract violations regarding like the maximum amount of persons to be photographed. But if you don't have that type of clause in your contract, and this particular, you know, member of our TLP Facebook community didn't have it in their original contract, and of course, they made sure to put that coverage limitation within their contract clause. And here, I just want to mention, it's important to list out every person that is intending to be photographed in your contract, especially for family photography. This is just another one of those things. So like the persons to be photographed should be listed at the top of your contract. That would be obviously all of the parents, all of the minors that are going to be present as well. And it's a good idea to highlight this section and explain it to your client in writing before they sign that anyone that's not on this list is not allowed to be photographed without an additional fee. So they can't just bring, you know, the grandparents to the session, because that would probably be a higher package that they would need to book with you. And of course, you're not just going to get one shot. They're going to ask for more and more, and you're going to try to over-deliver. So just don't put yourself in those situations. List out your coverage limitations and also list out your persons to be photographed. Now, last thing I want to touch on here is when you're listing out minors to be photographed, you want to make sure that that coincides directly with your model release clause, because any parent or legal guardian that's signing your contract needs to be the person that can actually legally subject the minors to a model release. So that's just important. Another, you know, note I wanted to make sure that you guys understood in this podcast episode. So the third clause that someone mentioned was the overall scope of services. And this is a great one to bring up, because scope of services is essential to any contract because it gives a very clear picture of what you will provide to your clients. And when you provide a scope of services within your invoice or within the very top clause of your contract, for many service providers, this is clause numero uno. There's no guesswork for your clients regarding what you will be providing for the amount that they are paying you. And then when there is a breakdown of communication between you or your clients, or you are going beyond the scope of services, there's, you know, the project is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger, you can always refer them back to these bullet points of the scope of services and all of the things included in the original package that they agreed to. All to say, listing out everything that's included in your scope of services is really important so that there's really no room for negotiation this way. You're going to have an entire agreement clause at the bottom of your contract that says nothing that's not within the four corners of this document is actually going to be provided by the service provider or is going to be included without a mutual agreement by both parties. So that if you were to talk about the things that they could add on during like an inquiry meeting or a discovery call, but that's not the package they booked, they can't come back later and say, well, on the call, you said you would just include that. Again, you want it to be super, super just easy to understand, clear as water. Like clear as all get out what your clients should be expecting in terms of the services that you'll be rendering. And then anything not on that list, you're not going to do without additional fees or contract amendments or addendums whereby they have to pay more or you're going to transfer things over or you're going to switch things around regarding your scope of services. I just wanted to send a very special thank you to all of those in the TLP community on Facebook that gave us input for this episode and for all of you who listened in today as well. I hope you felt it was helpful to you as you navigate the business world and the creation of your contract. Always, always, always feel free to reach out with any concerns or questions you may have regarding this episode in our TLP community on Facebook. It's super easy to find. You just go to Facebook, type in the Legal Page community, answer a few questions. We got to make sure you're a real business owner, and then you'll get into that group. Hope to see you there. Thank you so much for listening to the Legal Page podcast. I am beyond grateful for you, which is why I want to give you a coffee or your favorite bevy on me. If you leave a 5-star rating and review for the Legal Page podcast on iTunes, screenshot the review and send it to me on Instagram at the Legal Page. That's the Legal PAIGE. I will send you a Starbucks gift card from me. Just make sure to include your email in the DM. So again, send a screenshot of the review to me on Instagram at the Legal Page. Include your email address, and I will send you some Starbucks, because what better gift than caffeine for every business owner? Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Legal Page podcast. See, I told you being legally legit isn't so scary. Be sure to visit thelegalpage.com for all show notes. And it would be super awesome if you could head over to iTunes and leave a review. Last but not least, don't forget to join my free Facebook group for unlimited legal and biz Q&A. Chat soon, Legal Pagers.